I've heard the joke a few times. I think Louis C.K. was the first time I heard it. He said something like, isn't it weirdly human disgusting when you send like a sort of a contentious email, you press send, you wait a few minutes, and then you reread the email almost in a different kind of way. After you've sent it, you're almost rereading it almost to smell as if smelling your own fart. And he goes, it's most disgusting human behavior. And I've seen memes of it, the idea of sending something and then rereading it when it's out in the world. And then it made me think, it would be interesting to read my own poetry after I'm dead to see if it reads any differently. And I was thinking about like authors who have died in my time, and does it change the way I read their stuff once they're dead? I've only ever known Bukowski's stuff as a dead person, but his stuff is so alive that it feels like he was always supposed to be dead and his words just exist in the world. And then there's someone like Cormac McCarthy, who I read his stuff while he was alive. Well, I knew he was. I don't know if I could feel his alive spirit or anything. It's weird when you see celebrities and authors and famous people interact in real time and you go, oh my God, they live in the same world at the same time and breathe the same air. That's weird. But it just made me think of all these dead poets and alive poets and the ones that have been alive and then died, and do I read their stuff any differently, and how does it feel, and why does some poetry stand the test of time, and why is other poetry just uncompletely of its time and gone? And I start to think about feminine and masculine in poetry, and it's very feminine, interior, lyrical, gentle kind of form, where comedy is more kind of very much more masculine, cynical, snide. It's a bit more stoic. It's a bit more just laughing stuff off. And whereas, poetry is more feminine. And it made me think how a lot of books are celebrated in literary circles and win massive awards when they're more lyrical, and that's kind of feminine energy. Whereas a comedy book, it'll just disappear. It's got nothing. No one. It won't be awarded. It won't receive any kind of crazy critical praise. It's very masculine. So it made me think, the feminine gets rewarded and awarded. The feminine energy, I'm not talking about females and males, but just the energy of feminine energy and masculine energy. How the feminine energy is rewarded in literary circles, but masculine energy isn't, but it becomes cult. It's like the masculine energy stuff is almost like in its cult, and it's hiding in its man shed, and the feminine energy literature gets the whole house to parade around in. It's just interesting. I find that like really, really fascinating. And while I was writing this book, You're Going to Be Okay Because You're Fucked No Matter What, I just handed in the manuscript for it yesterday, and it's like, oh my God, I finally finished it. While I was writing it, I was writing a third book that I was hoping Andrews McMeel might take on love and courage, deliberately almost very feminine energy. I thought, let's do something outside my comfort zone. It's not completely outside my comfort zone, but I love cynicism and I love optimism and light and darkness and feminine and masculine. I like the masculinity of words and how they've saved me in my 30s, especially when I was working in jobs where feelings mattered the most. Like if you didn't look stressed, you would get fired. So you were paid basically on feelings, not actual productivity and work. And so in a day and age, I was reading a lot of masculine kind of poetry like Bukowski, and that was a counterbalance to the places that I was working in, where a lot of my bosses were female. 95% of the bosses I worked with in my 9-to-5 jobs, middle management, all that sort of stuff, female. It's just what it was. But that masculine poetry helped me at the time. And he isn't sort of celebrated as a literary darling. It's the feminine energy poetry is. So he's kind of like often cited as cult poet figure. And so, he's in his hiding in the man shed of culture, the cult man shed of culture. And a lot of books that stick around and stand the test of time have that balance of masculine and feminine energy. It's the literary darlings initially have that feminine coded energy, but the stuff that sticks around has that weird balance, that 50-50, I think, it seems to me that's the case. And maybe that's, I had another thought on this, which was a lot of my favorite writers hit their strides in their 50s and even 60s. They write stuff that sticks around forever. It's not always the case, but mostly it seems. And maybe that's because, say, as a female, as you get older, your testosterone increases. And as a male, as you get older, your testosterone decreases. So there's that weird balance. And not only is you're getting older, but you're getting wiser just from existing. You know stuff. You just know stuff. So maybe that's why a lot of my favorite authors are sort of later in life, because of all this physiological stuff, wisdom, life, experience, balancing that masculine and feminine stuff. And that stuff sticks around, that weird, interesting balance. And to add to that, I'd say someone like Charles Bukowski or Helen Garner, who I both love. I've nearly finished all of Helen Garner's books. She just, it's like brutal, brutal truth. She's an Australian author who, I think the New York Times wrote an article on her a few months ago. And all of a sudden, all these famous US people with millions of social media followers are raving about her. She's like in her 80s. And she's been around forever. And I only started reading her stuff maybe 7 or 8 years ago. But as soon as I read the first book, I thought, oh, you're like a female Bukowski, but more lyrical and in a totally different format. She's kind of writing that sort of gonzo journalism stuff on murder cases in Australia and in Melbourne. But yeah, as she got older, I was actually, my first introduction to Helen Garner was at university. We force-fed her very early book from the 70s, and I hated it, and I vowed never to read Helen Garner again. But somehow I got back to her 30 years later. But what's interesting is I find her, now I've read nearly all her books, I find her stuff from her 50s, 60s, 70s onwards is the best stuff. And maybe that's because, you know, you gain more testosterone as a female. I don't know. Apparently that's been proven. I could be wrong, but that's what I've heard. And with Bukowski, the other way, his stuff got more gentler and less cartoony machismo, and more, something else was coming through his books, especially his final book, The Last Night of Earth Poems, when he was just the year or two before he died. There was something more gentle that came through, and that maybe because he was losing his testosterone. I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything, but this is just a pure stab in the dark guess. But maybe that's why I love those two authors, because they'd lived the life, they'd balanced this feminine and masculine stuff. That's incredible. When I wrote You're Going to Be Okay Because You're Fucked No Matter What, there was a lot more masculine energy in it. I'd say something like 70 to 80% masculine, 20% feminine energy. And so I deliberately started writing this love and courage book. That was just a placeholder title. I was going to call it something else, but it was on the themes of love and courage and almost kind of a gentle feminine energy book that I was writing. And I thought this is kind of in the sort of the same vein as Darby Love, the mum book. I thought this could be a kind of a spiritual sequel to mum's book. And so I was writing it while I was doing the final edits on You're Going to Be Okay. And I had one last shot at editing You're Going to Be Okay Because You're Fucked No Matter What. And in the very end, I thought, fuck it. I'm going to put all the new work from this love and courage book that I was writing, this feminine energy work, into You're Going to Be Okay Because You're Fucked No Matter What. And so I put it all in the last day before I couldn't touch it again. So now You're Going to Be Okay Because You're Fucked No Matter What has something like, it's gone from 70% masculine energy down to about 55, 50 or some shit. It's and I, so I almost feel like some of those pieces I wrote for love, for the Love and Courage book, they felt like cornerstones for a new book. So I was like, oh my God, I'm burning these beautiful pieces that I've written that are very lyrical and beautiful, and I'm putting them into this this book. And I thought, and I was thinking, is this, should I do that? Because I could save them for a new book. And I thought, fuck it, I'm putting them in. And now, and I feel like, I'm so glad I did it. I did it, I sent it, and I actually felt good. You can just feel when something's good. You do something and you go, yeah, that was the right thing to do. And so it was the right thing to do to put these feminine energy pieces into the book. I kind of feel like if I was trying to write new pieces for You're Gonna Be Okay, they would have felt forced, they would have been unmagical. But because I decided to write a completely new book and go, let's start again, I felt fresh. So I was writing interesting, magical stuff on the feminine gauge of things. Yeah, by tricking my brain and pretending that they're not going to be for that You're Gonna Be Okay, I ended up writing good stuff, actual good stuff. And at the last minute, I redouble tricked my brain and said, no, they're going to go into You're Gonna Be Okay. And so now I love, with creativity, you have to constantly double cross your brain. You have to trick it up. You have to indicate left and turn right to come up with anything good, to refresh the brain and make it come up with new and interesting stuff. All this to say that You're going to be okay because you're fucked no matter what. I handed it in and it's way better than it was. It's better for it by balancing that initial load of masculine energy with this feminine energy that I was writing for a third book. But yeah, I'm so glad I've handed it in. And now I don't know if I'm going to write a Love and Courage book now that I've triple tricked my brain. But I might still stick on that wavelength and just see what happens. But it's the best thing that it can be, the Love and Courage book. I'm so happy. Not Love and Courage, the You're Gonna Be Okay book. It's the best thing I could make. And there was like 190 pages in it, and there was maybe 20 or 30 pieces in it that I thought, these are so, they weren't weak, but they would just undo all the hard work of the really hardworking poems in there. And so I was able to replace a lot of those too with the new stuff I was working on. I thought, fuck yeah, this is working. So yeah, I'm now in a place where I've just handed in two books to Andrews McMeel, and now I don't have to actually do anything. I don't have to do any more writing. Like, technically I could just not write for the rest of my life, but that's not how my brain works. I need to write, otherwise I'd die a little bit inside. Now I've just got to promote the books. I think they're strong enough to promote themselves. That's what I always feel. I feel like a lot of books these days are written, they almost feel like they're written almost as they're with the intention of hoping that the promotion part will make them catch fire. But that's not true. They just have to be good books in the first place. So, and yeah, I think people forget that a book, if it's good enough, it's gonna catch fire itself. There's only so much pushing and marketing and blowing at the sale on a book before it's a losing game. So I've read a bunch of books published by big booksellers that I would say are really poor, and I'm really fascinated by how some of these really huge, well-known publishers are publishing very mediocre books, and then they're expecting that the author's huge giant audience to make it a best-selling book, which sometimes and often it does, becomes best-selling, and then disappears completely. 2 years later, it's gone. There was nothing to it. It was substanceless crap. So I'm hoping my books aren't. Shit. Sounds so pretentious. And maybe I am. Fuck it. I am pretentious. I can be. And I feel when it comes to art, that's a thing. Another thing. I'm not confident with a lot of things in this life. But when it comes to art and creativity, I have 110% confidence with And even though I don't own creativity, I feel like I can talk about it with some kind of authority is not the right word, but some sort of weight, heaps more confident than I am with almost everything else. I'm a one-trick pony. I became so good at one thing, I was stupid at everything else. Painted myself into a corner. But yeah, I've got the window right next to me of creativity shining a light through, and it's moonlight. But anyway, if you'd like to leave a review for this podcast on Spotify or Apple, or leave a comment on YouTube, I'd love it. Cheers.